You're listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners. To donate, click on the Canada Helps button or go to westhill.net/donate.
It seems that as September comes around, when we hear the roar of those planes over Toronto, the idea of the turning of the year toward the attentiveness of learning seemed appropriate. So this is where we are today. I want to today look at organizational learning. It's one of the ways that we learn things individually. Hal, I think, could you pull me back just a little bit? Hal is helping me show you how forgiving people can be when there's messing up back there, so that you won't hesitate to take on that role because we need some more people. So thank you, Hal, for that. These many opportunities today. Yes. He's a riot. Anyway, thank you. So I want to get back to the learning thing. So today we're talking about organizational learning. And organizational learning, when we think about it, is about large organizations. But it's important to know that as students, as kids in classrooms, as we as individuals learn something, the way that we organize material in our brains helps us recall that and bring it back. And so although I'm going to talk primarily about the larger idea of organizational learning, the reality is that this affects each of us personally. And those different categories that I mentioned last week in memory, in the ability to reason, and in our verbal cognition. And by verbal, I don't mean what we talk about. I mean the idea about words and how words come to have meaning for us. And for some of us, words, one word for me can have a very different meaning than it does for you, but our ability to grasp the concepts of words and place that amongst the rest of our intelligence all comes together to help us interact in the world in positive ways. So today, the idea of operational learning. I have some different things that I'm going to talk about in relation to it, but the reading that came from T.H. White's book, it's actually the Book of Merlin, which was a posthumous conclusion to The Once and Future King, which he had written and previously published. So the quote comes out, it's Merlin is speaking and talking about what to do when you're sad. Now Merlin's entire purpose through the whole of White's book is to teach the young Arthur, the aging Arthur, how the world works and how to be a king, how to rule not just from might, but from understanding, from a way that is different from the way that power, even chivalry, worked. And so Merlin, who in White's book is getting younger and younger, he moves backward through time, he encourages Arthur to learn in a number of different ways. But one of them is to cope with any situation, not just sadness as in the reading, but in any situation by stretching him to learn his way through it. So I'm going to help us see some of the different ways that organizations can learn, and then how that might translate to some of our own problem identifying and problem solving in the world. So if we could have this first slide. There are sort of five kind of different steps that take an organization through learning, but again, these are personal steps as well. The first one is that you need to have some kind of a goal, some sense of aspiration. For us to understand what reality is and to cope with reality and to get through day by day and to do the things that we have to do is very good and very important work. But realizing that our reality isn't necessarily what we want, and identifying what we want by setting out a vision, by placing a goal before us, by identifying what our hopes are, can give us a creative tension that pulls us further toward that, so that the routine of the day by day is added to by this desire to stretch ourselves further into a future that doesn't look exactly like today looked. So in organizations, having a very clear goal, having a vision, sharing what that is with the people around you, and then helping them to support their work in achieving that is a very important part. So this stretching oneself toward the goal, and you'll see the guy in the little pic, he's held by what is, which pulls him back because it's familiar, it's comfortable. We don't want to go forward sometimes. I want to stay exactly where I am. It's a lot easier. But then, if I can find a way that becomes so important, so interesting, so meaningful, so everything, then I can pull myself forward and that I make my way toward what our aspirations are. In a corporate setting, this is absolutely essential. In a community setting, it's extremely important. In our own personal lives, we wouldn't live without our ability to set aspirations for tomorrow. We wouldn't bother getting out of bed if the routine did not have some aspect of hope in it. So this is the first step, is this mastering this idea that you can get beyond where you are and move into a better future, whatever that may be for you. It may be more productive. It may be more the ability to cope with some of the ramifications and situations in your life that you can't possibly change. It may be coming to a stillness in your center and working to be able to maintain that, if that's something that you're not able to do. That can be the aspiration that pulls you forward. So it's that sense of personal mastery that corporations need to give us. If you can give us the next one, Hal. Now, I'm not expecting you to read these, but this, I just want the image of a ladder in your mind. This is a ladder that helps us understand how we experience the world and how we make decisions. And it starts with the facts at the very bottom. If something could be, you know, if it was recorded and everybody saw the same thing, heard the same words, saw it on a video, we had all the facts were laid out. That's the bottom of the ladder. And making decisions on that, the actual facts, is what we all do, right? Like, we assume we're making decisions based on the facts before us. You often hear people say, well, your decisions are only as good as the information you have at the time. And that's true. They are only as good as the information you have at the time. Except most of the time, we're not making decisions based on those facts. We're putting and adding extra things to those facts. And as we get further and further from the facts up that ladder, we get to the point where we're making decisions that we think are based on the best information we had at the time, but they're actually based on a number of other things. The first thing is that the first filter that you do, that you place on that information, is what you actually believe. So in a situation, if you believe that someone is actually there to help you out, then you will assume that as you filter the information. They may not be there to help you out. They may not care less what your idea is or what it is you want to do, but you move forward believing that to be the case. Often we hear people say that as soon as you make a decision, the entire universe conspires to make everything work in your favor. Well, it's this first rung of the ladder. You're just assuming that what's happening when things go on in the world, that it's because that universe is conspiring to make things work out for you. You add belief to the actual facts. It may be that something just happened, but you add belief to it. As you go up further and further up the ladder, and I'm not going to go up the whole thing, but at the end, say you're in a meeting and someone has been sitting like this on their BlackBerry the whole time, and you think that they have absolutely no interest in what you're saying, you're annoyed, you dismiss them, you don't include them. If you're setting up a work group, you decide not to include them because they have been so rude, they haven't paid any attention to anything you've been saying, they've just been on their BlackBerry or their iPhone the whole time, completely dismissing anything you were doing. If you make that decision and you don't include them in the work group, you may be making a decision not to include that person who was actually tweeting everything you said because they thought it was the most important thing they had ever heard. And you've just left them out of the work group where they could have added an incredible amount because their passion for the information you were sharing was huge. So the further you get up the ladder, the further away you get from what the reality is. And so this kind of discipline in an organization and in our own lives is working our way back down the ladder so that we can get the real information. And we move through our lives so quickly that we often don't have the time to get that information. I'm not going to go up to somebody and say, what were you doing? You were on your iPhone the entire time I was talking. And in order to have them say, oh, I was tweeting everything you said. Most of the time we just go on to the next thing and make our assumptions. We keep them in place. We don't have to learn anything about that because we already know we're making our decisions based on the best information we had at the time, except that it's not the best information we had at the time. So this is just to encourage you to recognize that when organizations or groups pull pull that information back, that they explore the facts, that they share as fully as possible about those facts, that that will help them organize their thinking and organize their the way that they move forward. Could you move to the next one, Hal? Beautifully done. The next one is shared vision. The next one is shared vision. I love this picture because it shows, it really says the whole thing. It's not until we actually know what everyone has to offer to that vision that we can set one that has the goals of the group at its heart, that has the best goals. And one of the things I love about this vision is that this picture is that there's no single straight scope in that picture. Everyone is curved. Everyone has a little kink in it before we get to the actual vision. Now, it's true that groups have a very hard time writing a vision. Inspiration doesn't come to groups. Inspiration comes to individuals. It's individuals who, like, spark their minds off. But if each individual in a group has the opportunity to bring their own inspiration to the table, then the one who has the best wordsmithing skills or the one that can pull together ideas out of a whole group, that person can take forward a shared vision that will be much greater than just the one that you gave to the person that you thought was the smartest because he told you he was tweeting everything that you said. So getting the vision out of everyone can take a group forward in a really positive way and really helpful way and create a vision for a future that can be engaging and enlivening and energizing. Hal, can you take us forward again? Ah, you know what this is, right? Can you tell what this is from there? If it was moving, you might be able to tell me that it's a murmuration of starlings. When you're driving down the highway more often than in the city setting, you often see groups of birds flying together and making these waves through the sky, or insects sometimes do it as well. Shared learning, team learning, is extremely important, not just in that visioning, as I noted earlier, that it's getting what's out of the whole group, but what one person learns in an exercise is not the same thing that another person learns. So if we're trying to figure out the best way to create space for Sunday gatherings in this space, the way that Tom experiences this space is very different than the way Marjorie does. And learning from both of them, what works for you, what doesn't work for you, what it is that makes it positive, what makes it negative, bringing that all together helps all of us learn. And so the concept of a flock of birds all headed in the same direction, each adding to it, is representative of that team learning, which is so important. But if you go to the next slide, Hal. The next slide is totally incomprehensible to you, and that's why I wanted it up there, to show that it's about systems thinking. And I wanted to make it clear that it's all over the map, really, systems thinking. This is actually a piece that came from the Global Health Leadership Forum in Atlanta in 2010. But when I Googled systems thinking and team learning in Google, all the pictures, in the team learning pictures, not the systems thinking, all the pictures were of groups in a circle. Some of them had their hands out to another person coming in. Some of them were at tables talking. It was all about groups talking to one another. But every time you have a table group or you have a circle, what is it that somebody outside the circle sees or outside the table? Nothing but backs. You just see people's backs. So I loved the idea of the murmuration as more synchronized, more team related, that it comes down to, in a murmuration, maybe two different rules. One, stay this far away from someone, and two, always head toward the circle. We did a leadership team energy program here one time with Scott Campbell, and he had everybody moving around in and out of rooms just by giving them those two principles and telling them they needed to stick to them. And so one person would head in one direction and the entire room would be gone within moments. And that's what it functions on. Systems thinking is more complex than that. It has to take into play way more different elements, the future orientation and vision, the performance of the past, the group learning, the cross-pollination of ideas. All of that goes into systems thinking. meeting and helps us come up with a way forward that can be more positive. But the complex nature of that I thought was very helpful. After we get all of this way that we learn and organizations learn into our heads, where does that take us? It's all great information, but if you're not applying it to something specific, it's really just information in your head. It's like all the books on those shelves radiating out from the atrium. It's all just information sitting in there. It becomes knowledge when we take that information, we apply it to something that is important to us. And one of the most important things for us as a community, as individuals, globally, is to be able to apply the knowledge that we have in significant ways, the information we have in significant ways, and use it in an intelligent way, grounding ourselves, guiding ourselves in wisdom rather than just information and facts. We live in a world where the facts that we have at our fingertips are exponentially more than any other generation would ever have been expected to have. Just the idea of Scott writing a doctorate with the internet, the World Wide Web available to him, compared to someone writing a doctorate even 25 years ago who had a filing system and libraries, is the difference between those two things is almost unfathomable. But the information that we get out there, unless we turn it into knowledge and live it into wisdom, is almost useless. So one of the first things we have to do is figure out what the problem is. What's the problem? What's your problem? What's our problem? What problem do we want to put this information, this thinking toward, this learning? What problem do we have as a group, as an individual, as a planet? Naming a problem is one of the most important things that we can do as we try to find our way toward a future. Naming what's wrong and trying to address that is hugely important. And trying to address it in the right way is dependent upon naming the problem in the right way. If the problem is you, then I never have to do any work. If the problem is me, then I have to do some work. If the problem is some circumstances around us, some of which we can control and some of which we can't, then that's a very different problem than the problem being you. So you see that the different ways that we deal with, that we experience and move forward in life depends on our being able to identify what the problem is. Once we've found the problem, finding a way to understand the nature of where we are to where we might get is the next step. We have to find a way to cross that, to murk our way through those waters and get to the other side. So this is the problem here. We don't have enough money to tear the pews out and put chairs in. Okay, so that's the problem. It's probably not the problem, I just made that up. But so say that's the problem, then we have to find what's the solution? Well, getting enough money to take the pews out and put chairs in, that's the solution. Then what we do with that is we figure out how are we going to get that money to do that. That's the next thing. So you work your way backward from identifying the problem to how to solve it. Each of us has in our lives individual experiences and situations that we're going through. And we can use these ideas about identifying problems, identifying goals, setting a vision, pulling ourselves from our current reality into the future, thinking our way through it, getting some information from other sources, applying that to the problem, systems thinking across a matrix of different pieces of information to get to our goal. Each one of us has the responsibility of doing that in our own lives. When we get into a community, gets a little more difficult because we have a whole lot of people in the system that then have to be part of that process. We have to sit down with one another. We have to name what the problem is and name it clearly enough that everyone gets it and everyone agrees, yes, that's the problem. And then when you go from the idea of a community to the idea of the global community, the people of Pangaea, of humanity, well, identifying the problem becomes almost an unfathomable task. It seems like it's way beyond us, that we can't possibly cope with that. How are we going to get everyone to identify that that's a problem? It's such a difficult thing that we talk about it in myth and in legend and in story, because in reality, it's almost too big for us to get. A couple of nights ago, Scott and I went to see the movie Elysium, which I would recommend to anyone who loves watching people explode and incredibly nonstop scenes of violence. But the underlying theme of the movie is that humanity has broken into two groups. A group that lives on Elysium apart from the world in this space thing that goes around and is exquisitely beautiful and upon which life is perfect. Luxury and ease are the order of the day. Medical beds have been created that scan a body and fix whatever happens to be wrong with it within instants. Within an instant. And so it's a desirable, a beautiful picture of life. The other set of humanity, or the majority of humanity, remains on a tired, broken, exhausted earth, where they eke out shorter lives filled with poverty, with rife with violence, and constantly in situations of need and sorrow and loss. So the story, of course, unfolds like any good sci-fi story unfolds, with someone from the Earth colony trying to get to the perfect colony so they can save themselves and a few other people. But the big issue of the day, the big problem is that the people on Earth are not citizens of Elysium, and so they do not have access to the many gifts and wonders of technology that have created this perfect life on that perfect little piece of scrap metal up in the sky. So the problem isn't that one person is sick. The problem isn't that the Earth doesn't have enough resources. The problem is this discrepancy between those who have and those who don't have. That's the big problem. And so those who are busy trying to deal with the everyday stuff don't ever get to work on that problem. The whole of the Earth community doesn't coordinate itself, its efforts, and decide to deal with that problem. And so not only is it a futuristic portrayal of what happens on this planet and to its peoples in 150 some odd years, but what plays itself out in our contemporary world as well. We rarely get the opportunity to step back and look at the big problem, and we are hesitant to name the big problem. When I was in Halifax a couple of weeks ago, and some of you may have read a little bit about from my speech that's currently on my blog, I talked about the big problems that I see in the world. Big problems that are perfect storms in my estimation, because each of them has at play within them so many different elements that are all bringing it into this crashing crescendo of problems of massive proportions. So there is the planetary problem. Oh my goodness, we don't have to look very far to see how the planet is reeling under the weight of its 7 and some billion people. And not just those people, but the abuses that we wreak upon that planet. The second one I found was our social integration, our whole social cultures, and how they're falling apart as the result of a variety of different forces upon them. And then the last one was the one that we're particularly involved in, that concept of religion and the different things that are happening within religion which are challenging it and make it unable to come to the table with the gifts that it has brought in the past, the stories, the narratives, the possibilities that have been wholesome and healing for the human community are now lost and being trivialized. And so that perfect storm of that whole thing left me with a deep concern, a lament for our communities which seek to create change in our wider communities, the smaller communities around us, or on a larger scale as the First Nations Study Group is doing. But beyond that, to the deeply entrenched problems, maybe problem, that faces humanity. Addressing and naming that problem, I think, is perhaps what we need to do as people who call themselves church. Church over the centuries has focused on a variety of different things. It's focused on salvation, it's focused on the afterlife, it's focused on ritual and symbol and doctrine that has called us to the promise of an afterlife of wholeness and Elysium-like qualities. But that is not the purpose of this community of faith. It hasn't been the purpose of the United Church of Canada as a whole for a very long time. And so we have to identify what our purpose is, a purpose that is true to the problem. I think that over the course of the next little while, we can do a lot of work about identifying and naming that problem. And I think that we have to be bold enough to speak about what that problem is, not just the issues that are going on in our communities, but the big problems that create those issues. To speak truthfully and honestly against forces that will try to shut our voices down. It was interesting to read in a review that the Republican Party has denounced Elysium, the movie, as socialist. Because, of course, it wants to bridge that gap between the haves and the haves not have-nots. And I don't think the problem is capitalism. I think capitalism is a brilliant undertaking that brings out of people incredible creativity and challenges us to live that creativity, to build on it in the world. I think capitalism is not the issue. But I think there's a problem that we need to define. And I think that then people of faith who are really, take the word faith away, take doctrine away, take away the rules and regulations in the afterlife, take away the symbols. We are people of story. And if we can find the story that talks about that problem in a way that calls us to live it out in our personal lives, in our community lives, in the world, we are people of story, and we have so much to offer. I think the processes of learning, the organizational learning, the identification of problem, I think these are all important elements. But I think the most important one of all is to recall who we are as a community, who we are as individuals, and then live that, name that, write it, and become it. I think that is an incredible gift and an incredible opportunity that West Hill has to offer this world. May we continue to learn, unfolding within ourselves that stretch between where we are and where we might be, letting go of all the opinions we have about things and dealing with the facts, articulating ways that we can come together, practicing ways to come together so that we can learn from one another and have the experiences opened before us so our own understandings can be changed. And then figuring out how to work together as a team as we write that new narrative, bringing to it the best that we can with all the systems that overlap to make it so. It's our calling, I'm convinced that it is. And may we be about it with creativity, with honesty, and with passion. Thank you.